Okay, we're going to take your phone calls with Scott Stevens, but also share your incredible weather story with us. Someplace, somewhere, you were involved. Lots of lightning, something. I want to hear that story when we come back. Welcome back. Scott Stevens with us. Scott's website, of course, weatherwars.info. Scott, some people believe we're in the stages of a mini ice age right now. What do you think?
I think that that English team, that researchers that essentially mathematically figured out that there's oscillating waves or two counter-rotating wave patterns, northern hemisphere, southern hemisphere of the sun. And when they're in sync, the sun goes quiet. And for a period of time, I think 200-300 years, maybe it's not quite that long, that the sun goes quiet enough that it greatly impacts Earth's climate to the point where we have a maunder minimum type of cool down. And I think that is very apparent that that's what's happening, is that we're headed into a period of probably 100 years, if not something larger, that's more ice age in nature. I think that may be one of the reasons why they've aggressively gone into weather modification, is trying to delay that descent into an ice age. Because once that happens, then we'll reglaciate the poles. We will deal with falling sea levels, everything. This is kind of like, you know, the little fever before the cold sets in.
Yeah. There are certain things out there, Scott, like the 500-year flood. I was in one in 1993 in St. Louis. And apparently what that's supposed to be, and you correct me, is that every 500 years you're supposed to have this major, huge flood. But if the flood occurs like in 2000, you could still have it in 2002. It just means you're going to have one every 500 years. But I think we're having more of these, not less.
Well, do we have 500 years of record to know what statistically has happened in the past? And we don't.
No, we don't.
We don't. And then since we know there's geoengineering going on, there's a whole other wild card in the deck, maybe even two or three. And so we're pulling up these jokers far more often than we would be had the weather been left alone. And that's the other thing with global warming and climate change is we don't know what this planet would be doing if there weren't planes in the sky, if there weren't geoengineering programs in operation. We just don't know. All we can do is speculate and deduce and wonder what will happen the day after that it ends. That's my big question is what happens the day they let go of the breath of this planet? What happens? And they must be terrified of it because they're throwing a lot of money at it. I mean, ungodly amounts of money. So, you know, and then the beneficiaries are the military-industrial complex. You know, they're just, sure, you know, like pigs at the trough right now, feeding on the money. So, I mean, and it's from little airplanes. I'm seeing so many little Cessna jets up there. Little Cessna jets with the straight wings, you know, and they've got a payload of 2,000-3,000 pounds, but they could be airborne and they cost a lot less than, you know, than a 737, and so they can have a lot more of those little planes up there with their own little mixtures, you know, doing these jobs, shuttling back and forth from place to place, and doing whatever they need to do or are tasked with doing. So.
All right, let's go to the phone. Stories and questions. We'll go to Andy in Norwalk, California to get things started. Hello, Andy, go ahead.
Hey, great show, George. And Scott, I think you're right on the money. I've listened to you for a number of years, and I think you're one of the most knowledgeable and accurate prognosticators and interpreters of what is going on. Now, first of all, I'd like to make question and then a quick story, if I may.
Sure.
The question is this. Hurricane Katrina, you did extensive studies on that. I'd like to know what conclusion you drew from your studies. And number two, like, was there another source, another power besides God behind it, like Russia, China, or whatever enemy in the bag of enemies that we have? And secondly, I was going through Texas 1970, approximately 75, 76, and I had purchased a 68 Buick Riviera from a police officer.
All right.
And I was going through Texas, and I'm going down this highway, interstate highway, and about a mile and a half down the road, I see this tornado, dark funnel cloud, crossing the highway. And being very young then and very stupid, I said, I wonder how powerful it is and what would it be like to go through it. So I got my speed up in the 68 Rev about 100 to 110 miles per hour. And as I'm going through it, I, at the last second, I said, you know, is this really a smart move? And I said, oh, what the hell? Why not do it? So I entered the darkness, hold the steering wheel real tight, and all of a sudden, I hit a vacuum. And it was like the best description for what I can give you from what I remember is it's like time had stopped. And it was an eerie silence in the middle of this thing. And at 100 to 110 miles per hour, after approximately 5 to not more than 10 seconds, it seemed like eternity, all of a sudden, my car started shaking and vibrating violently, and I thought for a second I was going to lose the car and my life, of course. And then all of a sudden, the car is rattling like crazy, and finally I cleared it. And I had no idea what I was getting into, but I thought I'd share that story because it's true, and of course, I don't have to tell you I would never do anything like that again, but when you're young, you're stupid, you know?
Okay, thanks, Andy. 110 miles an hour, Scott, that's a big category, isn't it?
Well, it is, but what I'm curious about is, what did you feel? I mean, any thoughts, because you know, it's like you're going through a time distortion field when you go through that kind of a rotating event.
Yeah, it is.
Strange. Yeah, there's something else there because, you know, we've got enough pictures of straw embedded in metal. Straw sticks or you know, small projectiles deeply embedded in things. And it's truly like things come apart and they come back together again. There's some distortion that happens in those tornadoes where there's literally like above and beyond the suction going up, but a weightlessness that happens in the center of those vortexes. And I'll tell you, that is exactly why we went out and put magnetometers out in the way of these tornadoes. And we got very, very few, well, we got one direct hit. But we got close enough to these rotating cells to where you could see that there was some distortion. And that would be something that would be really, really nice to fund and to be able to go out and complete and have a little better crews, little better technology now that we're 10 years later, and to measure what happens inside these tornadoes above and beyond just the classic meteorological conditions, because there's something else going on in them that's, well, fascinating.
He wanted to know if there's somebody behind, like, Katrina.
He did, didn't he?
Yes.
Well, Katrina got me fired from TV, so I'll always remember Katrina.
Did it really?
A
little too outspoken?
Yeah. Well, I was outspoken, and I had just done a coast, and it was a big show. It was a big show, and it created a brouhaha. And that ended up with me losing my job. And so maybe it happened, you know, almost 10 years ago to the day.
Yeah.
It was 22 September of 05 that I got let go. So, you know, Katrina holds.
You'll always remember Katrina.
I will always remember Katrina and the impact that had on me, the career, and so forth. You know, I think the agenda that was at play during Katrina is the same one that's at play now. That it's not necessarily government on government, that there's an overriding cabal that runs it all, that has the top dog when it comes to technology, that has the best intelligence, the best crews on the ground, or the most paid, or the most brutal, whatever it is. But they're the ones that have been in place since the 40s and 50s, and probably even farther back than that. I do find it fascinating, though, that essentially from that hurricane season,
We haven't had a Category 3 impact the eastern United States since.
No, we've been lucky, very lucky.
Yeah, we've been lucky, or something changed.
Or somebody has been, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know what, I don't know how, but we've been fortunate to go through, what, 119-month drought now. It'll be 10 years, or it'll be 10 years next month, October, since Wilma made landfall, and that was the last Category 3. So it's a blessing. It's a blessing because Florida was utterly hammered the previous year at 04, and the geometry and the patterns that I saw were so bizarre that I couldn't not say anything as I was kind of, you know, coming into my own and understanding how some of this was being done. I'm like, I had to raise my hand and say, no. There's something wrong here. There's something wrong here.
Let's go to Mark in Montreal, east of the Rockies. Hey, Mark, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Mr. Stevens. It's great to talk to both of you.
Hi.
In 1998, we had the famous ice storm in Montreal. It rained ice or freezing rain for 1 week and a half nonstop. And it covered everything. Cars. In other words, the whole city was under besiege. It was almost like martial law. You couldn't be outside. Houses were covered. There was misery. The water supply in Montreal was on the brink of collapsing. Downtown Montreal was abandoned. There was ice
everywhere.
Shears falling off 30-story buildings.
Gosh.
And the police were patrolling the streets, all police, detectives, whatever, with the red lights on 24 hours a day. They even had the army in here. And they never saw something like that in 100 years. And I went up to get my car, which was in the driveway, and I swear I couldn't tell it was a car. It looked like a Chiclet. You couldn't tell anything.
Huh.
They never experienced anything like that in their life in over 100 years. And it caused chaos. It was blackouts. There was electricity.
It was horrible. Do you remember that, Scott?
Yeah, I do. I remember the photography. I remember the news. I was in Idaho at that point in time. I had just left upstate New York in 96. Because if I had been in Albany at that point in time, then, you know, I would have been essentially on the edge of that event, or on the edge of it. It would have been all rain that far south in the Mohawk.
And we're talking 3 to 4 foot thicknesses of ice on top of roofs of houses.
No.
There were people slamming their roofs with sledgehammers, and they destroyed all their roofs. There was roofing coming in the springtime to redo all the roofs. The cars themselves, I swear, the cars themselves, you couldn't tell it was a car, okay? It looked like a block of ice. People were hammering away with hammers and everything.
You couldn't drive? You couldn't do anything?
It was unbelievable.
How long did it take to melt away?
Oh, my God. It took a few weeks. I mean, even the trees themselves, okay, the trees all over.
They all snapped.
They were all bent sideways, yep, because of the weight.
They snap the wires, power wires snap, everything.
The hydro columns, the big hydro columns that supply 250,000 volts of electricity in outlying areas, they crumbled just like a deck of cards, okay?
Like those power poles. Wow.
Thanks,
you know,
Mark.
And Defense Secretary Cohen, just 2 years prior to that, had called it eco-terrorism. But that's what was being done. It was eco-terrorism.
How do you think modification or manipulation, Scott, started? I mean, whose great idea was that?
It was probably some of the generals in World War II, you know, wanting to be able to know on D-Day if they could land troops. Would it be clear for their bombers to be able to, you know, if they're going to load, you know, fly 500 B-17s, you know, into the German territory, the frontier, you know, whether they could see their targets. The bombardiers need to be able to see. Do we send out a fleet of fighters or another set of bombers with cloud seeding out ahead of it to be able to clear the way so then the fleet could come on in and do their dirty work afterwards? You know, this would have been a logistics goal to figure out how to do this. You know, and I understand, you know, as much as a kid as I was into war and planes, I'm like, yeah, let's do this. You know, let's figure this game out. I can see why they would do it. And this is why I am doing this, is so at some point in the time in the future that we have public oversight and that there's disclosure and that it can be used for the betterment of mankind rather than something that is used against us. Because it doesn't seem to matter whatever the invention is, somehow, some way, the powers that be end up turning it around so it is used against us. One way or another.
They know what they're doing, Scott.
Yeah, it doesn't matter whether it's vaccines, whether it's the internet, whether it's the weather, whether it's space travel, it's always used for their benefit above and beyond our benefit.
Let's go to George in St. Louis now. George, go ahead, sir.
Morning, Scott. Morning, George.
Hey.
Good morning. Say, I got a question. Jupiter, as you know, has a red spot that's like 500 years old. It's a result of two opposite jet streams. My question is, could that happen on Earth? Most hurricanes are 5 to 10 days. They hit land and dissipate.
Mm-hmm.
But what if it were possible for a hurricane to park off the coast, develop an opposite jet stream, and just park there for months?
You know, that's an interesting thought. But what I immediately flashed on was Ice Age. And if you were to, you know, have the glaciers extend down to maybe 50 degrees latitude north and south, that you end up with a jet stream situation where there are large cutoff situations. In meteorology, we'd call it an omega block, where you have the Greek letter omega, was the big sculpted meridional flow. And not just one storm like in Jupiter, because we have a completely different structure, planetary-wise and so forth. It's a very, very different beast. Our atmosphere is just paper thin compared to Jupiter's. And so we would be looking at something, you know, almost on a single plane versus the depth of their atmosphere. And we really don't know what causes theirs. We really, really don't know.
Scott, do you miss... So go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I can see cutoff lows end up being that kind of situation where we have a low or a storm persisting for not weeks but months and potentially years if we end up in a deep ice age.
Do you miss television weather forecasting?
It would depend on the situation. It would depend on the general manager. If I were allowed to talk about these things, I would adore it. I would love to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I was very good. I mean, good at forecasting, and if I could truly give the forecast I would like to give and like to present, we would be number one in the market by far.
Oh yeah, I think you would be. Scott, stay with us. We're going to come back with final phone calls with you and stories on Coast to Coast AM. Indeed, and we're going to come back and take some final calls with Scott Stevens and your weather stories. I love these weather stories. Welcome back. Our final segment here with Scott Stevens as we talk about the weather wars, and we'll take your call as well. Scott, what happens next with these weather wars? Anyway, what do you think the next move is?
That's a good question, George. I think the biggest wild card I'm grappling with now is the issue of climate chaos. Is that French foreign minister that stood next to our Secretary of State, John Kerry, in May of 2014 and said the world had 500 days left until climate chaos, which would put that date later this month. Is there something to that? And personally, getting through the rest of this month without an external event, having that French foreign Prime Minister's statement just being, you know, another threat to institute a carbon tax, I hope that's all it is, rather than, say, impacts from space resulting in copious amounts of water vapor injected into the atmosphere and then beginning to change the climate in a way that we're not prepared to deal with, at least we surface dwellers. That's I think the biggest thing that's facing us right now.
What got you, Scott, to shy away from man-made global warming?
Because the planet's not really warming. It's just not warming. You know, we're coming up on almost a full 19 years where we've been in this pause. And ultimately, it all comes down to the sun. Whatever the sun, if the sun is dictating ice age is imminent, then I'm not worried about global warming. We need to be building greenhouses so we can extend the growing season in places where we're going to grow food. That's really where our priorities need to be, is growing in greenhouses, not in monoculture factory farming. We need to be growing locally so we're not transporting food across oceans. That, to me, is just insane. Insane to be buying apples from China. It's stupid when we've got Washington State farmers here.
And they taste better here.
Yes, they do, and then they don't have to have their peasants out there dabbing their flowers, their apple blossoms, because there are no bees in that environment. No bees. And so it's just, I think the next 30 days are key, and we need to be thinking about greenhouses on a massive scale, you know, bermed greenhouses. So we can deal with a planet that is going to turn decidedly colder. So no, I'm not worried about about global warming. I'm just not. Droughts and what they're doing on regional scales, like the Western drought that's in place now, I think that is all going to come to an end. And I think, given a year's time, and maybe even less than that, George, the California drought will be a memory. And as I posted back in January, I would bet by Christmas that those reservoirs will be filling up very rapidly, and many, many, many of those watersheds through the Golden State will be running at bank full and higher as the El Nino comes on in. Because if you've got that Pacific Ocean several degrees above normal, the cold air from the Arctic comes across that, it can't help but turn over into just water. Water, 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 just like lake effect snows impacting, Rochester, New York, and Buffalo, and so forth, like we saw last winter. The same effect, but what it would happen on a much, much larger scale off the Pacific. So that's what I'm concerned about.
All right, off we go now with final calls with you, Scotty. Let's go to Dwight in Lock Haven, Pennsylvania. Dwight, go ahead.
Good evening. Hey. Nice to meet you both. Wonderful show tonight, and I've been a long-time listener, first-time caller. Just calling about the weather items, and 5 years ago, I left Lock Haven here in a thunderstorm and drove up a four-lane highway. I got about 15 miles away. I drove out of the edge of the storm, and the rainbow appeared beside my car in a 65-mile-an-hour zone and followed me for about a mile or a mile and a half down the road. And it was just like somebody had a giant projector, I'm guessing about 30 feet. And it didn't surround the whole car. It was just to the left-hand side of the driver's side. And I could see it on the hood of the car on one side. And there wasn't even just a straight stretch of road. There were several turns that I made, and this thing just followed me. And about the time I decided I was going to get my cell phone out and take a picture of it, it all ended. But it was just like Technicolor. And I didn't even know that was possible. I mean, I've seen them, but there, I can tell you there is no pot of gold there, at least not where I was.
Ever hear of rainbows like that, Scott?
You know, I hadn't, but the geometry makes complete sense. The sun was on your right side, the rainbow on the left side. You were still in a shower. You probably still had your wiper on, at least intermittent at that point in time. So you could actually be in the rainbow. You know, it's exceedingly rare, but yeah, makes sense. Makes sense.
Is the solar system heating up because of the sun?
That's my opinion, yeah. We're seeing changes on every single planet, George.
And it doesn't take much either, does it?
No. And the sun is going to go through a change. This is the end of a 26,000-year cycle. This is the end. The sun changes, all of the planets change, everything changes.
Let's go to Lynn in Fairfax, California now, west of the Rockies. Lynn, you're on with Scott Stevens.
Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you for taking my call.
You too.
I've enjoyed this show so much tonight.
You are up and at 'em. You're chipper tonight.
Well, I just got out of work. I should be out watering, as a matter of fact. But I'm sitting in my car because I wanted to speak with you about an event that happened to me, not here in California, but back in central Ohio, and asked Scott if this was rare. I've always considered this one of the most fascinating and beautiful things that I've ever seen in my life. And I may mispronounce this, Scott, but I believe they're called Mammatus clouds.
Mammatus, yes.
Oh, my goodness. They, George, what they look like, it looks like the cloud layer is very low to the ground, and it appears as though, can you imagine what the bottom of an egg carton, a cardboard egg carton looks like with those little scoops? It looked like the entire sky was dark gray, various colors of gray, with those little scoops coming down. It was awe-inspiring, and all I can remember, this happened about 40 years ago, is my mom and dad said, get the cows in the barn, because we weren't sure what was happening.
Yeah.
So, Scott, can you tell us a little bit about that cloud formation?
It is a strange cloud formation, Scott, isn't it?
Yeah, and we talked about it a little earlier when we were talking about ways or mechanisms used to prevent thunderstorm development. And the reference I'm going to give you is go to YouTube and Google underwater waves. And so what you'll find are surfers who have gone, and they're in their scuba gear, they've got their stuff on, but they're shooting up towards the surface of the water. As these waves are coming ashore and as those waves break and tumble, that's exactly what you'll see. That is, it is a perfect representation of what's happening in the atmosphere. And so they'll use this mechanism to trim back the strength of thunderstorms, or simply, decapitate them, is what happens so often when they want drought to happen. And then in the wake of that, the storms will take on almost a very, very shallow, I don't want to say, like a funnel shape. Like if you were to take a funnel used for gasoline in a car, except broaden that funnel out so it's very, very wide. And that's what the shape of those waves eventually will sculpt.
Yeah, are they severe storms?
They can't be.
Associated with those clouds?
Especially as the downdraft is maximized. Because remember, this storm is wanting to build up and build up. But the upward development, the updraft, was collapsed by this wave. And so the water, the rain, essentially has to fall back to the earth. And it is literally, untold tons of water cascading back to ground. And so you can get these downpours as these clouds show up, and that's the danger. That's the risk.
To the wild card line we go. Spencer's with us in Atlanta. Hello, Spencer.
George.
Hi there.
Good morning to you.
You too,
good
sir.
Good morning to you, Sir Scott. I'm here on the East Coast, so I'm saying good morning.
Yeah, you sure are.
Yeah,
me too.
We see the sun before y'all do. But this show you're talking about, the weather, it's like one of my favorite kind of weather situations is the rain. It is raining here in Atlanta, Georgia, right now.
And you needed it. You had a drought there a few years ago, didn't you? You had that big lake that was going.
We went through a drought, George.
Yeah.
But look, it got a song out, George. I know you probably heard it. It never rains in Southern California. George.
That's a great song.
So true. So true. I mean, Atlanta did have a heck of a drought a few years ago, Scotty.
And they've got one developing presently.
Another one?
Wet spring. Well, just all the way from North Carolina down across Georgia, Alabama, a little bit away from the coastline, and then developing again in eastern northeastern Texas. July turned dry, so is August, and September hasn't brought a whole lot of relief. And typically this time of year, we're dealing with some tropical storm incursions into that part of the country. And that's not happening. And so without cold fronts or, something to turn over these thunderstorms, they're beginning to dry out. And so we've got some areas of severe drought even showing up in northeast Texas.
even after all of the rains of the spring. So, and typically in El Niños, that's not necessarily their driest signal. It's wet for the west, but not always for the Gulf Coast.
Kate's with us now. Let's go to Hawaii. Go ahead, Kate.
Aloha, George. I love your show.
Well, thank you.
Yes. And Scott, thank you for all the wonderful information tonight.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure.
And I was driving home, listening to your show, and Scott, I heard you say that you had a dream about white cubes.
Mm-hmm.
I did too. And I said, I have to call. This is the first time I've ever called in. I had to call because I just couldn't believe it. They are intelligent. This thing, I looked at it and I scared it. But there were hundreds of them in the sky, hundreds of them.
Yeah.
And I couldn't figure out what they were here for and what they wanted. Do you have any idea?
And our guys and our Air Force will have nothing to be able to do. I mean, they can't touch them. They can't touch them. So, yeah.
Why can't they touch them?
Well, they're not agile enough. They're not quick enough. It's a technology that is generations beyond what we have. Generations beyond. And they were cubes. Cubes in the sky.
Think if they ever shut down HAARP, it would affect modification?
I think that's just one tool in the toolbox, George. I really do.
I think you're right.
I mean, you know, there's so much. I think we'd do much better if we could pull these 2,000 planes out of the sky that are playing with it. I think that would be a better plug to pull, much better plug to pull.
And drones now. They've probably gone to drones, haven't they?
Yep, they're all drones. You know, and you know, really, one of the things I want to do is get on the road, because you talked about getting back into TV, George, and you know, I could see. In a different venue that happening, but I want to get on the road and do community gatherings.
Yeah. Where are you living now? What state are you in?
I'm in Colorado.
Ah, okay.
Colorado. And set up Scott's Cloud Tour, where I can go to, you know, this conference up in Shasta, or, you know, there's things happening all over this planet now, because this movement has grown to the point where the numbers are present to where we can have an impact. What we don't have is a common voice, a common understanding of what the agenda is, how it's being, you know, being accomplished, I suppose would be the best word. And I want to have a greater voice in that.
Well, you do have a great voice, Scott. I mean, you're one of a kind, let me tell you.
Well, and so I'm doing a little fundraiser, and you can find it on the website. And it's a simple thing. And it really doesn't cost people that much money. We're just using Bitcoin, because we're trying to save. You know, I've got gold and silver out there, but there's this other digital currency, and I really have this gut feeling that this is going to be a big bridge across the financial chaos.
Interesting.
Coming.
Bitcoins.
Not everybody's going to have access to the metals, but the coin, the Bitcoin, is something that will be able to escape capital controls. And negative interest rates and deflation, it's going to be a sought-after currency. And so I've got a little write-up on weatherwars.info and also on Facebook, scott.stevens.1276. And a little bit is going to go a very, very long way.
Super. Thank you, Scott. Let's keep in touch, because the modification is definitely underway. Stick with us all week. We've got some more great programs for you here on Coast to Coast AM. For Dan Galante, Gina Salvati, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.